Hey, welcome to the Pachanga and Possibility Podcast, the podcast where we celebrate the power of healing and transformation. I am your host, Natalie Calzadilla. Each week, I'll be interviewing experts that will inspire you to discover your soul's purpose and create a fulfilling life. I'll also be sharing some spiritual coaching along the way and personal adventures as I enter this new phase in my life as a mother and entrepreneur. All right, mi gente, grab your cafecito and a notebook. Let's get started.
Welcome back to another episode of Pachanga and Possibility. Today you are in for a treat. We are on Pachanga mode because we have an amazing musician. Praful is our guest for today. I call him Praful. Apparently that's what happens in the States because it's spelled P-R-A-F-U-L, but it's Praful. And he is an amazing musician that I discovered on Insight Timer and became a huge fan of his work, especially a particular album that you're going to hear about in the interview. This interview was wonderful. He really took us in his journey of transformation when he was an entertainer and a jazz musician and had his spiritual journey and healing journey and awakening journey, all of that just came together for him and really created a shift in who he wanted to create music for and why. And just this whole shift from just being a regular entertainer to creating sacred music that is for the heart, for opening hearts, for awakening, and just at a heart level for a much different audience. And he was amazing to speak with, just all of his insights that he had along the way of his journey of doing his amazing music and why he does it. And I asked him specifically about a couple of my favorite songs and what influenced those. He is just phenomenal when it comes to creating healing music. He's probably my favorite artist when it comes to healing music, actually, now that I think about it. It's just really touched me in a deep way. So I'm going to read his bio. Praful is a master sound healer, multi-instrumentalist, singer, producer, and charismatic performer. He embraces jazz, soul, dance, Indian, and New World fusion with grace and passion. In 1992, after having completed his studies of jazz, sax, and flute at the Amsterdam Conservatory, Praful went on a spiritual quest to India. He meditated in the ashram of the enlightened mystic Osho and learned the Indian bamboo flute, Bansuri, with Pandit Hari Prasad Chaurasia. I might have butchered that, but anyways. Equally fascinated by Brazilian music, he went to live a year in Brazil and immersed himself in the music scene of Rio de Janeiro. Over the years, all of those influences integrated into his own brand of sacred world fusion, first presented in 2001 on his album One Day Deep. Released in 2003 in the USA, the album became a major success in the U.S. jazz scene, U.S. Billboard chart notations, and the number one radio hit, Psy, were accompanied by extensive touring. Several radio singles and two more albums and a similar chill-out style followed. After 2006, his heart was calling for change. His busy life as an entertainer and band leader felt increasingly empty and did not bring happiness. He went on a quest for his true calling. Since then, new music and projects have been birthed. Praful is a regular guest artist on many festivals and gatherings throughout the world, giving concerts solo with one of his projects or playing healing events together with his partner Vimal Gabrielson. He is currently working on a new solo album with music inspired by our dear Pachamama, Mother Nature and all its sentient beings, entitled Selva Sagrada. So without any further ado, here is Praful. All right, really quick before I bring him on, I'm going to play my favorite song by Praful, and you're going to hear why it's my favorite song during the interview, but I just want to play this song for you so you understand why his music moves me so much, and I hope that it moves you too. This song is 7 minutes, so give yourself the gift of this 7-minute spiritual experience by perhaps sitting down, closing your eyes, putting both of your headphones in, and just breathing into this music and just giving it as a little gift to yourself of relaxation. And then I will play his interview. And instead of doing my regular outro music, I am going to play his new song from his latest album. All right, enjoy.
Shoulders.
Welcome, Praful, or Praful, as we say in the States, to the Pachanga Impossibility podcast. I am so happy to have you here. It is an honor. I am a very big fan of your music. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Natalie. Thanks for having me.
How did you get into your music in general? Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from, because you're currently in Germany, correct?
Yes.
Where in Germany?
Kind of center. The city of Cologne? It's kind of central Germany, more leaning towards the west, so not far from Belgium, Holland, France.
Wonderful. So tell us about yourself in your words. Who is Praful?
Well, first of all, I'm a human being. You know, I'm a spirit doing my journey in the material form, I would say, like all of us, and enjoying this wonderful journey on this planet, you know. And then there's a few roles and, let's say, few things that, of course, I've taken on in my life, and one of them, that's also how you found me, one of them is that I love creating music. Big part of my time goes into spending, you know, creating music, playing concerts, recording, and composing and all that, you know. So, yeah.
So I found you through the meditation app called Insight Timer, and I was instantly mesmerized by your music, and I went onto Spotify to be able to discover the rest of your music, and in particular the album that really I was really obsessed with was The Call of the Beloved album. That album in particular moves me deeply, and the strangest thing happened with one of your songs and what was going on in my life at one point. So I had just found you. I was listening to this album over and over again. I was particularly in love with the song Don't Fight With Life. Mm-hmm. And from the Don't Fight With Life song, the YouTube version, which is the mashup of Don't Fight With Life with the Om Namah Shivaya. And I would just play that one over and over and over again. And I felt like something strange was happening for me, because it was just the words. It just kept saying, like, don't fight with life.
Life simply helps you, takes you on its shoulders.
Yes, life simply helps you, takes you on its shoulders. Yes. I've never been the person to, like, sing songs back and remember lyrics. I'm really bad at that. But it was don't fight with life. Life simply takes you and lifts you on its shoulders. And that kept, I just kept playing the song on repeat over and over again. And I was like, uh-oh, something's coming, because this particular song is really just resonating deeply with me. And I felt like it was preparing me for something. And sure enough, about 2 weeks after me playing the song all the time, my life kind of imploded in a relationship that was in, and I had fallen into a very deep depression. And it was just like a really difficult, dark time for me. And that one song was kind of the alert system saying, like, you can feel like the messages. And I was like, this song's doing something. And sure enough, everything kind of fell apart, and that song and kind of carried me through those times. And so when I think of you and your music, I think of that time that, even though it was difficult, at the same time it was beautiful, because it reminded me that spirit was already preparing me for what was coming, and it was holding me through it. And I would continue to say that the lyrics to the song to myself and remind myself, like, it's going to get me through what's going on. So I just wanted to let you know that story and how it really unfolded and why your music has a special place in my heart. Mm. And then the other thing that happened with your music for me, that was a few years ago. I want to say like 2 or 3 years ago. And recently I lost my father in December to cancer, and it's been difficult because I have a baby, so I'm on like mom baby mode right now. It's been hard to find the time to grieve his death, and I felt, even to the point that I had almost like I couldn't connect to the grieving feelings. and to that pain, I felt that there was some sort of block. And I hadn't listened to your album in a while. And I played the album again. And instantly, like one or two songs in, it just opened the floodgates for me. And I was able to get a lot of those emotions out that I was having issues expressing. Your music just has a way of moving just the emotions and connecting to my heart. At least for me, that's what it's done for me and why I was so excited to have you on the show. So if you can tell me a little bit about that one song, I'd love to know the background about it.
Okay, so with this song, If You Don't Fight With Life, I need to first give credit to the person who wrote that line and the part of that song, because it's actually very rare that I play songs by other people. I mostly play my own music. But in this case, somehow this song came to me, maybe 5 years ago or so. I started playing around with it, also in my solo concerts. So the person who wrote this, his name is Peter McKenna. And he's actually also originally German. Also, he spent many years with Osho in India. And he wrote a lot of beautiful songs. Some of them are known from, the Mantra Duo Deva Premal and Miten, who also play some of his songs. But he's a beautiful man. And he lives in California, just north of San Francisco. And so he gracefully agreed for me to record my version of it. Now the combination with the mantra Om Namah Shivaya and how the whole thing is arranged and set and also harmonized a little bit, that is more my my spin on it. So yeah, this is the journey of the song. I think it was kind of written also, I think, with that energy and spirit of the ashram and of Osho and meditation. And that whole journey of, of coming to that point where you realize you have a choice, whether you fight with it or not, and that we are not victims to what happens to us in life unless we ourselves decide that that we should be, and that we have the possibility to, to go into this surrender, basically. When we can surrender to, especially to the things that we don't have a lot of control over, then often there comes a sort of ease and comes a sort of flow, and suddenly, magically, the things that seemed huge obstacles and huge hindrances, sometimes the hindrance and the obstacle becomes a lot smaller, or maybe even disappears, I mean, even what is a hindrance? What is an obstacle? It is basically ourselves saying, this is what's happening to me, but I'd rather have something else happen to me. And if we wouldn't have that thought, then there could never go anything wrong, Mm-hmm. And of course, this is a journey because it starts with the small things. But as maybe some bigger issues happen to you, maybe health issues, maybe relationships or death, or then again and again, it's great to remember this because it just makes life a lot easier. It's like a tool that you could use. And I would say that purpose of songs that repeat very few lines and very few words again and again, like a mantra, whether that's Sanskrit or English or in any language, doesn't really matter, but that can be very helpful because I think when things are packed into music, we have much more enjoyment with it than if we have to sort of, in a very dry way, repeat something just by speaking it. I mean, the Tibetan monks do it. They just say, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, and that's okay. You can do that this way, but I think we like to be we enjoy being seduced also by the music, and when the music opens, music opens us up also to the message more. So there's a kind of a double benefit from it. That the words can have an effect, but also the music. If the music supports that, then it can even become a lot stronger. I think in this case, the repeating and the it creates something that when you hear it again and again and again and again, then maybe that little crack that at the beginning may be oh so tiny, it may just open up a little bit more, and you might experiment with it. Okay, what happens if I really just don't fight with life, you know, if I don't fight with wife or whatever it is, you know? And don't take my words for it, you know, it's like, it's just a proposition to the people, and try it out for yourselves, you know, and then see what happens and give it a chance, and maybe it works, you know.
Yes.
Who am I to say?
I do feel that the mantra together with music is more powerful, because I am not an affirmations person or a mantra person, but if it's in music, it's when I really enjoy it and I feel the benefit of it.
Yeah.
Tell me about that part in your life when you started doing jazz music, correct? Mm-hmm. That was your main. And then you transitioned into more of the spiritual healing music. Tell me about that time in your life and how that shift occurred and why.
I would say that the music, or what wants to come out of us, is always very deeply related to our own evolution as a human being. And we grow, hopefully, not only old, but also up, you know, and ideally. And I think when I was younger, I was, on a personal level, I was for quite some time, I was very closed, because of my childhood. Something happened. My father died when I was 11 years old. And somehow I was seeing my mother falling apart from that. And I decided for myself that I was going to be strong to replace my father. And somehow I kind of built a fortress around my heart from that time. And I never realized how closed I actually was. I couldn't really feel anything for a long time. So I think going into the music was a way for me to maybe embark on a path where I could learn to open up more to feeling. You know, I would say that when you fill your life with something like music, there's a bigger chance it will help you doing that than maybe if you are, I don't know, working as a stockbroker or something, you know, just to pick any random other profession. So, but it wasn't until I was 28 and I was done with my jazz studies. You know, I studied on a jazz conservatory in Holland. I think I love jazz, and I loved it also as a younger person, certain types of jazz. And also I think that the jazz environment, because it was somehow a little bit more intellectual than I would say the environment I came into later with the more spirit music, it was also still a very safe place for me, because it was actually a kind of music that I was able to learn and develop without getting too deeply involved emotionally. And I think when I was done with my jazz studies, I was 28, so I was at my Saturn return, and I had really completely lost myself. I mean, if such a thing exists at all, you know, it's just a way of saying, of course, you can't really lose yourself, but it feels like that you kind of lost contact with your spirit, with your, somehow I had lost in this whole jazz journey. I had lost really the connection with this voice in my heart. That was the whole reason why I wanted to be a musician, you know? So there I was, 28. I was like, one of the best musicians around, extremely highly trained and skilled, but I didn't know anymore why I wanted to make music. You know, I had lost it. And together with this suffering that was there from being so closed, it was such a high, I would say, pressure of suffering that I really had to take a bigger step. And that was the moment when I went to India. Because I had heard about Osho and about the ashram, and I knew that I could learn meditation there. But not only, I knew also there was a possibility for therapy, you know, and I had a strong hunch that I needed therapy and not just sitting down and saying, oh, I think that wouldn't have done it for me at that point, you know. So that was the magic combination for me, and I stayed a whole year in India at that time. I think when I came with this whole jazz baggage, and I sat down and I met the people that were involved in the music there, and they asked me to play for the evening meditation in the big meditation hall, in a Buddha hall. And I was playing there the first time, the first day, and there were maybe 1,500 people sitting in front of me, and I was used from the jazz to playing so many notes in one measure, you know. And there I was sitting, and I was just playing one note, and I could just feel that this note was so deeply absorbed by the people in that space, even though it was just one simple note, and it was absorbed and received by the people on a much deeper level than I had ever experienced before, sitting with people playing music. And this really did something for me. It kind of brought me really back down to basically to square one, you know, and I learned to forget about all my training and just go back to just playing very simply and purely from the heart. And I think that time there, it really saved my life. You know, I don't know what I would have done if I hadn't found this way of, let's say, embracing myself on all levels and, you know, opening up to my own pain and all that. So, I think the journey that started there and that happened in the maybe 10, 20 years after that, I would say is that I've always felt very deeply that music for me is not just a way to fill the silence. It's actually a way to make the silence more experienced, more palpable, more, you know, more strong. It's a way to actually connect with that silence inside of yourself. And I always felt that I had a gift with music to bring that to people. And I think I've known that already when I was a child. But society brings you onto certain paths, and I think it just took me a very long time. I'm probably a very slow learner, but it took me a very long time to trust that quality inside of me. You know, that was actually all that was needed to allow myself to trust that, and not thinking that I have to, you know, live a life similar to other people who are more like, you know, working as entertainers. I mean, there's nothing wrong with entertainment. We all need it to, you know, to some degree. And even spiritual music is just also a type of entertainment as well, you know, but it's combined with something else. There's another benefit you can get from that, you know. And I think for me, I just felt so much more fulfilled when I realized that I could play music for people who were open to this kind of experience, you know. And I think I must tell you honestly, once you start playing for people like that, you know, for people who are open to more deeper and spirit experience, you don't want to go back to playing in a club where people are smoking, drinking, taking drugs, and talking loud. You don't want that. I mean, this is the best experience you can have, to play people like that. You know, they're present, you know. And it's unfortunately, I have to say, there's no way back, you know. Once your head is in the lion's mouth, there's no way out of it.
That is amazing. I could feel the energy behind it, like the experience, like how amazing to go from what playing the, you know, like the, like what you just described, the drinking and the smoking and the people who are not present, and it's just entertainment, to something, to create a music that's so sacred and has the ability to open hearts. And then you're playing to open hearts, and the audience is different, and you're received differently, and you're having your own spiritual experiences while you're playing. And it's just how magnificent that shift occurred, and how beautiful, and how it gave you that fulfillment that you needed, and helped you open up from the trauma that you experienced as a child to now being able to completely open up. And now you're so heart-centered in what you're doing.
But it was still a long journey until now. I would say I feel that I'm quite at a point where I have a quite deep trust to that purpose in my life. But it was still a long period where I always felt I was a little bit living in two worlds at the same time, and I was sort of nourishing that little fragile plant that was growing in me. But at the same time, I was also missing something in that world, because I was used to playing with extremely well-trained musicians. And in this world of, let's say, the heart musicians and the spirit musicians, especially now there's a lot of a good quality around. But I would say in the 90s, when I started out, there was a big gap between the well-trained professional musicians and the more, I would say, most of them more amateur musicians in that field, you know. And I was always feeling I was missing something here and something there, till eventually, you know, the two worlds, they merge into one. And now I can't remember when that happened, but I think my story in America had to do with that as well, you know. It's kind of interesting. I don't think I can talk with you being from the United States, even though you say you have Cuban background, but you were born in the States, I suppose, or?
I was born in the States and my parents are Cuban. I was born in Miami, Florida.
Well, you know, I had a number one hit on the jazz radio in the United States in 2003. And there were like about 3 years or 3-4 years that I toured a lot in the States, and some of the older generation, they will remember me. You know, I was constantly on the radio, you know, the contemporary jazz kind of radio stations. And it was an amazing experience. It was really beautiful for me. But it also made it clear for me at some point that I had still not clarified my intention enough in what I was doing, because I was still also, for a large degree, I was an entertainer. And at some point I felt I could not bring this deeper dimension into the music as much as I would like to in the setup, in the settings that I was playing. And kind of, it also just happened. I ended up in this world because, you know, a label in LA just picked up my music and suddenly it went sky high, you know. So, and then it was like, where is this guy? We got to get him here. He's got a tour here. It was a wonderful time. But when it ended, at some point, I just looked in the mirror and I just felt like, if I keep doing this, I won't be able to look in the mirror anymore very soon. I won't want to look at myself anymore, you know. And that's basically where I decided to drop everything. And that was, I think, after what happened in India with me when I was 28, this was the second moment in my life where I really had to allow myself to fall into a deep gap without really knowing what's going to happen. I just stopped everything. I've never been back to the States since then. You know, last time was probably 2005 or 2006. And it just didn't happen after that. But I came back to Europe and I wasn't doing anything here at that time. I was pretty much most of the time or busy in the States. And I just decided to relax and see what wants to happen next, you know. And it was a bit of a scary time also, because I didn't have the next thing on the horizon yet. And still, I knew I had to stop with what I was doing. And sometimes there are moments in life when we have to kind of just follow that feeling without having already the guarantee of, hey, here's your next big thing already knocking on the door, you know. And that, I think it needs courage in these moments in your life, you know.
Definitely. It reminds me similar of the path that so many have when they're in a corporate 9-to-5 and they have a longing to do or be something else. And that's that scary point of quitting their job and waiting for the next thing to take hold and not knowing what that's going to look like. And so I think people can still relate, even if they're not musicians, just that scary point of saying, this isn't serving me and I want something else. And I think this is it.
Well, you know, we need to see what, you know, if we have the courage, if we don't feel that 9-to-5 thing, then, you know, there is a reason why we're stepping into it, even when we don't feel it, you know. So there is security and there's fears, you know, and yeah, we need to see whether that is really nourishing and supporting us, you know, to approach life from that place. You know, I know that the 9-to-5 question was actually what got me into trying to be a professional musician in the first place. And when I was younger and there was time to, you know, take a decision what to do with my life, maybe I was like 21 or something, I just asked myself, so what can I do that will still feel exciting and where I could still feel passion for it when I'm 50? That was the thing I felt. 50 seemed like so far away. So it was ridiculous to even think that you would ever reach there. So I thought, if I can imagine something when I'm 50 that I will still enjoy, okay, that's the thing to do. And actually, I had a list of 10 things, and the only thing that was left at the end was music. There was nothing else that I could imagine I would still enjoy and find exciting and inspiring at that age. You know,
so I wish
I'm 57 now. Still enjoying
it. You're still enjoying it. The right decision. Yeah. I wish I would have asked myself that in that way, because I would have gone into music or art. And most of in music, I love percussion. So I've played the steel drums and congas and what else? Mainly percussion, regular drums, timbales.
Your Cuban roots.
Yeah, my Cuban roots.
Exactly. I used to play concerts in Cuba. I love it.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never been. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, it's kind of tricky as a Cuban American.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love music and I love percussion. And I always say like music moves me so deeply that, you know, God exists because music exists. Like, that's how I can define it. Like, it's just so... And there's no words for me to describe it.
You know, we need people that listen to us. We can't all be musicians.
Good point. Yes.
But then there are many ways of actually finding this fulfillment. It doesn't have to be art or music, you know, but it can mm-hmm. be. There are so many ways. It's just sort of allowing that to unfold and giving it a bit of a chance in your life, you know, and it doesn't even necessarily need to be your profession. It can also be something like what you're doing now with the podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, that is maybe just also a calling that you feel, and that can be wonderful. And maybe it's enough in certain life situations. It doesn't have to be a 180 degree upside down turn. You know, sometimes the small steps lead to something bigger.
I agree 100%. So, at what point when you had stopped doing the regular entertainment and you were in that place. Did you have your name yet that was given to you?
Yes. I took my name in 92 and mm-hmm. I decided right away that my new given name would also be my artist name, my new artist name. Mm.
I love the artist. And does it have a meaning?
Yes.
A story?
It means flowering.
Oh, that's beautiful.
The phool is in Sanskrit is the flower, and phool is the act of the flower, you know, opening. So it's an ongoing process. I actually have two names. My prefix is Gyan, which means wisdom. So my full name is Wisdom Flowering, but I experience it as it's the same when you talk about presence and awakening. It's not something that you do at some point and then that's done, you know.
Right.
When you talk about whatever you want to call it, enlightenment or a state of presence, it's not something that happens, you know, somewhere and then it's something that happens in every moment. It's something ongoing and this is the beauty of it, you know. It's not something you can grasp and hold in a way, you know, and that's for me. That's the same like flowering, you know. It's something where it changes all the time, and it's a cycle of life. You know?
Yeah. I love that. That's beautiful. I have another favorite song, which is the Yemaya song.
Ah, okay. Yeah, sure. You must have some connection with the Orishas.
I think it might be just the Cuban roots because I recognized, you know, the Orisha and you were singing about Yemaya, but then at the piano, I felt like and correct me if I'm wrong because I'm not a musician, but I felt through the piano like the more Latin influence.
Well, you know, that was actually the time, end of the 90s. I was working with a band in Amsterdam when I was living at the time. And we were playing Yoruba music, but in modern arrangements. The band was called Bayuba Cante. And it had like a Cuban, it had three singers, a Cuban lady, and two other women singing, and we were playing the bata drums, the ones that are used in the rituals, in the Yoruba rituals, you know, Santeria rituals, and we had a cello and we had a flamenco guitar, and so it was a big mix of styles and a happy melting pot. Like all my music always has this kind of different
the fusion.
And often my music also speaks to people like you who have also a mix of different cultural backgrounds. You know, like I'm not much of a purist. You know, I like the mashup kind of.
Yes.
But in those days, we were playing with this band a lot, and that's the band I was with in Cuba also. And you know, imagine playing in Havana for a big festival. Playing Santeria music, you know, we had also songs for Chango and Yemaya and Obatala and all these. Not this version of Yemaya. This is one that I made later for myself. But playing in Cuba for the Cubans, playing their music, but in a way that it would never sound when they play it.
It
sounded like European and, you know, flamenco and mixed up.
Yes.
They just loved it. They loved it so much. You know, it was amazing.
I could imagine.
Wonderful memories of Cuba. It was really beautiful. Wow.
Yeah, that song and your version of it, it's like this, it has the little bit of the roots of the flavor of the Cuban music, but that has this layer of enchantment like on top of it that is just, it's like amazing. Now you have a new album that you're working on, which I don't know if it's done yet, with the Selva Sagrada.
Yeah.
That's not out yet, right? Because I looked up Spotify.
No, I released one song that's going to be on it, Cura el Corazón.
That's not Los Rayos del Sol?
That also, but that is only on YouTube. Exactly. That's going to be on that album. And also one piece that's called Cura el Corazón. You might want to look that up. It's on Spotify.
Okay.
It's also on my Bandcamp. There's three versions of it, actually. There's remixes also. That is also going to be on that new album, yeah.
And what inspired this album? Because it's Spanish, or at least a couple of these. Is the whole album in Spanish? Or
actually, there are, I would say, two-thirds of the songs are with lyrics, maybe even three-quarter. And it's a mixture of Spanish and Portuguese. I must tell you that part of my life story. I used to be married to a Brazilian woman, and I lived in Brazil also in the 90s. And so I speak fluent current Portuguese, and I also speak Spanish because I worked a lot with Latinos when I was living in Holland, and somehow they never spoke anything else than Spanish. You know, so
very Latino, they never want to learn any other language.
And of course, I used to play salsa and these kind of things, probably around the time you were dancing salsa, I was also playing it. Also in the 90s and a little bit after that. And I was really enjoying working with people from all kinds of backgrounds, you know, also Africans. But when you speak Portuguese and you hang out with Latinos and can't help yourself but starting to understand and speak Spanish as well. And I think this album, Selva Sagrada, is it started that I started feeling more and more like a bit of a reconnection with this time when I was living in South America. And I was also living in the Amazon for some time. And I feel the energy very strong of the country, of the earth, but also of the people and of the language. I love Brazilian music. And I love also many Spanish, you know, Spanish music or like Spanish language music, South American. And there's beautiful, you know, all these such a rich culture also, all these different styles in all these different countries. I mean, when we talk about salsa, this is just like, okay, salsa is a soup, but right. It's a sauce, you know, but there's so much variety and different rhythms and, you know, and there's so much wisdom also in this people and in this music. And in these cultures about how to connect with Earth and how to live in harmony with our planet Earth, you know. And I feel that this whole aspect of how to respect Earth, how to live more in harmony with her, how to preserve her, how to honor her, this whole aspect also through the climate change and all that has become a lot more present in our in our conscious field, I would say. And I feel that this has brought me to reconnecting with that, you know, with that music and going back into it more than you know, like I used to do in the past, you know. So that was my sort of starting point for this album, because I have done so many different things. I'm kind of an artist that gets easily bored when I repeat myself too much. So I always like to embark on a completely different journey for the next project. This was what really called me very strongly this time. And it's almost finished. I've kind of slowed down a little bit through the whole corona crisis and took it easy also. And I'm homeschooling my daughter and things like this. And you know, not pushing it too much. And mm-hmm. But it's coming out in the next, I would say, 2-3 months.
Yeah, that's great. I'm excited for that. I listened to Los Rayos del Sol, and I think it stayed more in my memory because it's the video with the dancing and everything. And that one's really beautiful. So I'm excited to hear the rest of it when it comes out. Mm. How was your experience when you played for a Gartoli?
I just I really love the guy. He's I don't know. It's just I find that he has this way of sharing what he talks about that I think you can get, even people who have never heard anything about spirituality, they can get it, you know. And mm-hmm. I think he's a wonderful man. I haven't met him very much because he keeps very much to himself when I was at the retreat with him. Or several retreats, actually. But you don't get to see him much because he's kind of, he keeps very much to himself. But there was always a day when we would meet and talk with him. And, you know, and other than that, I would also just sit in his talks and enjoy what he talks about. And I think he's an amazing wordsmith paired with his presence, his experience of presence, and the way he can bring it over. I think it's fabulous. So it doesn't surprise me that he's so popular. And I also think that, you know, sometimes you meet, let's say, gurus, and they seem to have found something, but they're exuding this feeling of well, you know, maybe you get it, but look at you, you are like a king, you know, and who am I? You know, I'm just a normal person. Who am I to get it, you know, like where you are, I will need 100 lifetimes to reach there. Some gurus, they give you a little bit this intimidating feeling. And I think Eckhart is a person that you wouldn't even notice him if you didn't know that he's such an amazing man, you know. If he was your neighbor, he would just, you know, you wouldn't even notice he's your neighbor in a way, you know. So he looks very ordinary and not not like anybody very special. And I think this is also very beautiful because it gives us a very clear feeling of what he's talking about is not something very far away to reach. It's something that is very available at this very moment, you know, and he kind of exudes that, I would say. It's beautiful. Yeah.
He does. He's definitely feels relatable in his, like, I don't want to say ordinary in a negative way, but like you said, like if he was your neighbor, like he's very, you know, yeah, low key. Was that the same experience with Osho? Because I have to ask how, because he's been very commercialized. Like, how was the experience? Was he there at the ashram when you were there, or had he left to the States already?
No, actually, I came to India in 92 and he left his body in 90. So it was
afterwards.
It was a bit more than a year after he left his body. Mm-hmm. I would say how I experienced it was that his energy was very strong there in the ashram in those days. And maybe I wouldn't have had the courage to go there if he had been there still.
Oh, wow.
I don't know.
That's interesting perspective. Yeah.
I didn't have the courage to do that when I heard first about him, because my brother had also been with him, and that was like when I was 18. But I was on a different path, and I really wanted to be a hotshot musician, you know. And I think I hadn't hit rock bottom yet in my suffering, you know, it needed those extra 10 years. And then I was ready. I mean, I would have probably gone if he had still been there. Maybe a little bit untimely that I needed so long to come to that point. But but for me, it was perfect. You know, whatever happened to me happened with whatever he had created there, and I didn't need him in flesh and blood to be there. You know, I got everything that I needed. So yeah,
That's a great experience. I want to quote you in your about page. I love what you were quoted saying this. It says, "My heart was longing to melt in love and joy with other hearts, to disappear in sound and silence, to become one with all. Music is my gift to those who are ready to travel with me into the depth of being. Music can help you awaken. Once my life purpose revealed itself to me, I had to live it." That's so beautiful, and it really shows like the energy and the heart behind your music. What is lighting you up these days? Like, what is really making your heart sing right now?
Oh, there's so many things. It's hard to even point out one. I mean, I feel so blessed with everything, you know. I mean, again, it's like we started out with, if you don't fight with life, but if you want, there is every reason to be disappointed right now. You know, I haven't been able to play a concert since 5 months, 6 months maybe, because we're in lockdown here and I'm receiving a bit of money from the government. Of course, you could be desperate about these things, you know, but for me, I mean, there's always so many gifts hidden in everything. Like right now, I must say that the fact that I didn't need to travel for like 4 months now is a tremendous gift to me. I haven't had that in 30 years. I've always been on the road, you know, and my body is just saying like, thank you, thank you. That you give me this time to just relax and sleep in. And you know, I have my studio. I'm sitting in my studio right now. You can't see much of it, but I have my studio that is kind of attached to the house. So I can keep on creating music and, you know, doing a few jobs here and there for friends who asked me to record something, or can invite people and do some collaborations, which I did in the past months. So there's a lot possible. So I feel... I feel every bit as blessed as I've always been. What makes me absolutely shine and my heart sing is definitely my daughter.
Oh, how old is she?
She just turned 9. She's a single child, so she's sometimes a little bit struggling with the whole situation that she can't hang out with all her friends at the same time. But we can have a little bit of meetings in homeopathic doses. It's just amazing to see that when we are in peace with what's happening, then she is just flowing with that so easily as well, you know. And she's just taking in everything very gracefully. So that's beautiful to see, and to have her around me a lot, and also my beloved, my partner, and we're just a little bit in our cocoon here with the three of us. I remember what it felt like when my daughter was small, because you said you have a little baby. I don't know if you're a single parent right now or if you have someone, but even when you're with two, it's still full on.
It is, yes. I don't know. I don't know how single parents do it, because I'm exhausted and I have an amazing partner, and it's wow.
Yeah. I have the same. I don't know how they manage, but I didn't have to do it on my own. That's such a beautiful time also to enjoy, mm-hmm. even though there's a lot of exhaustion and tiredness, but it's also an amazing connection you have with this being that's so dependent on you, and that becomes less and less, of course, as they grow. But it's I would say that everything you invest into it at this stage, I don't know, how old is your child?
6 months.
6 months, yeah. Everything you invest in these first 2 years comes back thousandfold later, you know. At the beginning, you feel like just giving and giving and giving and giving, and you feel you have nothing to give anymore, you have to give more. But it turns around and it comes back really thousandfold. It's very beautiful, yeah.
Good. I'm looking forward to that.
But also, you know, what really, really gives me incredible enjoyment at the moment is that we have snow out here, and that I go with a sledge with my daughter, and, you know, I can, through her childlike fascination with snow that we don't have every winter this much, you know, then I can also relive my own kind of childlike enjoyment with this magical sort of
That's beautiful. What do you do when you look for inspiration to create music? Do you have a ritual? Do you have something like, what, how do you get into the zone to find that musical inspiration? Or does it just come?
Well, let's say that it's kind of, inspiration is a feminine quality, I would say. Like all the feminine and especially women, is something that you can't control them. Yeah, it's a little bit like the most important things in life, like love and this kind of things that you cannot make them. You just have to sort of make yourself available. Maybe you can prepare mm-hmm. the ground a little bit, but then
right.
there's a certain grace that just has to happen. And I think when you really want to do something, that's the best way of not getting anything sensible out, you know. And sometimes it even happens that I'm just sitting here and I have like an instrument, like this is a bigger type of ukulele, a baritone ukulele, but I could just be sitting here and playing around. You know, maybe I'm watching a Netflix movie or something, and I'm kind of playing a bit at the same time. And then something may happen, and maybe I'll stop the movie, and I'll be playing something, you know. And it can be anything that really puts you into that zone. And sometimes it's also just great to just sit down and start with something, you know, like something I learned in that time when I stopped in America, and I told you I had to kind of wait a little bit to see what wants to come out next in life. I really learned in that time to find that ridge between not falling into a lethargy or feeling like, oh, I don't know what to do, nothing's happening, and not falling in the other extreme of kind of pushing myself into something so that I feel like, oh, you know, I gotta find out what I'm doing and I gotta be proactive and all that, you know. Americans are really good in that usually. You know, this kind of constant feeling like, oh, you know, I gotta be productive, I gotta be creative, yes. I gotta be, you know.
The constant on, yeah.
I gotta produce and I gotta, you know, have value and all this stuff, you know. I mean, society wants to push you into this, you know, but again, I would say that the great happenings in life, love, you know, awakening, inspiration, creativity, there are things that just happen to you and you can't just tell them like, okay, now you have to happen. It just doesn't work that way, you know, and I think it's beautiful to allow also this space of just not knowing sometimes. And then at the same time, not kind of letting yourself fall totally into, like I said, into lethargy. You know, that can be a little bit become a habit also, you know. But yeah, I think it's just you know, the golden middle way, as Buddha used to call it. That works pretty well for a lot of things.
So you went to school for jazz. When did the singing become a part of your journey? Was it always there, or did that come as a result of the spiritual, like healing music? Because you also have a great voice.
Yeah, but well, you know, if I'm really, really honest, then I think that I experience all music as music, even singing. Like when I listen to music with lyrics, then most of the time the lyrics are secondary to me, because I'm really a musician's musician, kind of, you know, I'm a music musician. I would say, but I think singing started coming more and more into my life when I was, because I was working also with music, with singers a lot, you know, obviously, because a lot of the bands, they have vocal music and they have singers. So I was always working with singers. And when I met Deva Premal and Miten in the 90s, I toured for them for a while also. You know who they are. I don't.
I'm not familiar with them.
Well, they are kind of one of the most well-known mantra singers on the globe. You know, they're a couple. They've also been with Osho many years. She has, she's especially her, she's very popular. She has done many CDs. And when I started touring with them, they had lots of concerts lined up. So I just supported them as a musician. And but Deva in those days, she was never writing her own material. She was never composing, and she had just released her first album. And I was touring with her, and somehow I thought, oh, I'm going to try to write something for her that she can sing. So I started taking these old Sanskrit mantras and putting new melodies and music to them. So over the years, she has recorded, I think, more than a dozen of my songs on her albums. Some of them became very popular. There was a start for me of kind of composing also with words, you know. What I liked about mantras was that I was actually using words, but since I don't speak the language, I'm not Indian, they were just sounds for me. Of course, you can look up the meaning of a mantra like Om Namah Shivaya, like we talked about. That's beautiful. That can give you a frame also. But when you, in the moment you sing it, you're not thinking of the meaning of the words, you see, because it's not your mother tongue. So I really always liked that somehow, you know. I like the voice even just as an instrument, as a, you know, as a, something that is a beautiful way of making sound, you know. And for me, I see it more as an instrument than, let's say, as a means to convey a certain message. Mm. And of course, when you use words, it's nice that maybe you have a nice message to say, better than something really nasty. In my case, I'm not a rap musician, or, you know, so I would rather prefer that you know, that you get that extra bit from something that also has a beautiful, deeper meaning. But I've even written songs where I've sort of channeled sounds, and I can't tell you what they mean, but they're like mantras, but they're not traditional mantras from any existing language. Maybe I just channel them directly from the source, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. all music, all words come from the same source anyway, you know, so mm-hmm. why not channel them yourself?
Exactly.
For me, that was the start. And then I sensed that, I mean, the only reason for expanding your, let's say, your set of instruments is when you pick up an instrument that can express something that you couldn't express with any of the other instruments that you played before. Mm. Yeah, so I would call myself a multi-instrumentalist because I use a lot of instruments in my concerts. And I think the voice is just something that can express something in a way that you can't really do with any instrument. You know, the voice is so close to our human nature and our soul, and it's for everyone, because you see, an instrument like a flute is something you have to learn, but not everybody has that, not everybody plays that, not everybody grows up with that sound. But a voice, everybody has a voice, you know, so everybody can relate to voice in a very direct way. So that's sometimes the voice goes in more directly to the heart than an instrument does. You know? Sometimes an instrument does that, you know. But I like using the voice, and there's sometimes I do things with the voice that I have no idea where they come from. I just kind of open up the voice, and something very shamanic can come through, and it's sort of, that's how I would describe all my music, actually, you know, just opening up sort of a channel for a sort of download that happens in the moment, you know, and the voice just seems to be part of what that channeling wants to use, you know. So I don't resist that, let's say, you know.
Oh, I'm glad you don't resist it, because it's amazing with the music and all of it, all the instruments that you play and your voice together with everything. It really does. You choreograph this beautiful healing energy, and you could really feel it in your heart. And I'm really grateful that you had that aha moment and that your purpose was revealed to you, so you can share all of this beautiful music with the world. So, where can people find you? Where should people listen? Where can they find you? How can they connect with you?
Well, many ways. My website is prafulmusic.com. So PRAFUL and then music in one word. There you can find all the links. Then, of course, I'm on Spotify. You can find me on Facebook, Praful Music or Praful Mystic sometimes is my name. Yeah, you can find me on SoundCloud, on pretty much everything, Instagram, everywhere where you want. Also, there's a band profile where there's the most complete collection of all my releases, like lots of things that you might not find on other portals. Mm-hmm. It's called Bandcamp.
I was wondering what that was. I saw the Bandcamp and I...
So it's praful.bandcamp.com. And there you really have all my, I think, 35 releases or something you can find there. There's everything, as my music is extremely eclectic, and that's from very silent meditation music to sort of full-on dancing music and remix, dance remixes from DJs and, you know, and everything in between, classical music. I mean, it's pretty vast what I've done over the last decades.
I have a special request. Mm-hmm. Can you make your version of Cuban timba salsa music? Timba.
Yeah, I could try. who knows? I would take it into account.
Challenge accepted.
what's your favorite timba song then? Can you sing me?
Oh, no, like you don't want me to sing anything, but I can send you a link.
Well, send me one.
I don't want to do that to my listeners. They'll unsubscribe.
So that's great. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. I truly enjoyed this conversation with you. Thank you for making such beautiful music. You are an amazing human being. And just, yeah, I'm just really happy right now. So thank you so much for your presence.
Yes, thank you also for inviting me. It's been a great joy to talk to you and to look at your lovely smile for the last hour.
Thank you, thank you. All right, y'all, it's a wrap. Until the next episode.
Plantas que me cura, cura el corazón.